Hey friends, welcome back to the Work Your Wealth podcast, the show where we're teaching you how to make smarter choices with your money. I'm not your host, but I'm here with your host, Mary Beth Storjahan, certified financial planner and founder of Workable Wealth. Today we will be flipping the script and I will actually be interviewing Mary Beth, I being Brian, Mary Beth's husband, and we will be discussing why we decided to merge Mary Beth's business, Workable Wealth, into Abacus Wealth Partners. Mary Beth, welcome to your own show.
Thank you for having me. I've been sitting here silently laughing for the past 45 seconds. That was a great introduction.
I've listened to several of these, so I feel like yes. I got it down.
Yes, great.
All right, so let's start off. And the first question that I wanted to ask regarding why we decided to merge your business, Workable Wealth, into Abacus Wealth Partners is why you felt it was important that we both talked about it together. I mean, I feel like this has been over a year process or close to a year process of if we should or if we shouldn't. So I wanted to get your thoughts on why we frequently talked about it, why you felt that was important to you and to us.
So I think, first of all, is this the first time we're actually like really announcing it? I know I've mentioned it in podcast episodes. I should go back and listen. But surprise, we merged Workable Wealth. And I think we did mention it. I've mentioned it in a few podcasts now. But if you haven't listened to those, that's what we're talking about today. So this is your official announcement. So to give a little context, this merger, Workable Wealth is the financial planning firm that I own and owned. And Work Your Wealth is the brand. Work Your Wealth is the brand that goes along with the podcast, the books, and there will be continuous education that comes out of the Work Your Wealth brand. Workable Wealth is the name of the financial planning firm, registered investment advisor specifically that I owned, registered in the state of California. That's the background context. But ultimately, Brian, I think it's really important that we talked about this together because it was a big life-changing transition. It was a life-changing transition for the both of us. And for me to make that decision in a vacuum, solo, by myself, would have been unfair to you, would have been unfair to our family, and really to our financial situation as well. I think it was really important for me, especially. I always talk about having money conversations with your significant other and making sure that they're included in the process. And this was one of those really major financial decisions that could affect us, like our long and short-term trajectory, and had some really interesting hurdles and opportunities that it presented to us. And so being able to have you as a sounding board was very helpful as I went back and forth on this for have no idea how many months and how you didn't kill me. But I specifically remember you telling me towards the end, make a decision. It doesn't matter whether you choose to stay or you choose to go. You have to make a decision and you can't make the decision and then look back and immediately second guess yourself and think about what could have been. Whichever way you decide to go, you have to decide and stick with it and stop putting the pressure on yourself to think what could have been one way or the other. So I just think it's important that we both made the decision together because it impacted both of our lives. And it would have been unfair for me to keep this to myself and right. Keep it as a decision that I made for myself.
Right. Yeah. No, I think you had a good opportunity either way. And I think it was figuring out which one was best for you and for us. And I agree. I think the conversations were important because of how it would affect us financially, how it would affect us on a day-to-day basis, our schedules. It wasn't just you, like you said, in a vacuum, making the decision for you. It was making the decision for us. Okay, so let's look back at the previous almost 6 years now. It'll be 6 years in 2 months from now.
Holy cow, I'm old.
Yeah, it's crazy. But tell me a little bit about how the past 6 years have looked since you started Workable Wealth back in August of 2013 and where it's come to at this point and even beyond.
So in general, you know, Workable Wealth started in August of 2013 while you were actually the decision to start Workable Wealth started while you were deployed floating in right. The middle of an ocean. You know this story very well. And by the time you were back, I think I had the company was registered. And I mean, during that time, I remember the first few years, I started off on my first three clients I took on were at the lowest fees that I realized were just, that was not sustainable. I couldn't run a business or bring in an income for our family with what I was charging at first. And I quickly realized, I think I was charging low in the beginning because I was questioning like, ooh, am I qualified? Even though I have 10 years of experience in the industry doing exactly this, there was a little bit of fear and insecurity when I first started, but I quickly realized, no, I know what I'm doing. And I found myself in a couple different study groups and we pushed each other and I became known as one of the top personal finance people for millennials, and not personal finance like guru, but personal finance, like I do financial planning. And so that became part of my brand and it helped to elevate me in the industry, in the financial planning industry. And from there, I just built my online presence. And honestly, I built from an online platform, and then I also have some great referrals that come in from clients. And so the company has continued to grow. And last year, 2018, as you know, was the best year for Workable Wealth. We took on over 30 new clients, which is a lot for a financial planning company. In typical financial planning world, when you're doing the type of financial planning I do and not just investment management, the standard is that you only take on two clients a month. That's like what you can reasonably take on, manage expectations, not burn out. We were taking on probably at least three in some months and even more depending on how it flowed out. So it was a constant run in 2018. And I had just had, but we had Luca at the end of 2017. November 2017, we had our second child, Luca. And so 2018 was kind of a blur, but it was our top year. I had my best growth yet. There was a lot of opportunities. I was learning how to say no to a lot, but I was feeling really burnt out. And somewhere, I think in August, I really started thinking about digging into, you know, everybody always asks, like, what's your vision for Workable Wealth? What are you building? What do you want to do? And I know my life vision, but the Workable Wealth vision was really the hard one that I struggled with because there's only two options for building a financial planning firm. You basically become what's a solo practice, which is what I was. Solo practice means you take on your clients, and the only way to continue to make more money is to take on clients who pay you more and more. So you have to keep increasing your minimums, which would take me away from some of those people that I really enjoy helping and working with, or you have to begin to expand and build out your team and go virtual. And most people do this in a brick and mortar. They have office space, they have their team in-house, and Workable Wealth is unique in that it was virtual. I was hiring across state. Ariel, our other team member, I hired her. So I'm in San Diego. She's in North Carolina. Our assistant, Lisa, she's in Michigan. So I already had my team spread out, and then would be needing to continue to hire and build virtually as well. And it would take me out of the day-to-day financial planning and into that management side and away from that education and the delivering of advice like this, doing a podcast, doing those things I felt would continue to get limited while I would be focusing on building it. So that's what the past 5 years looked like. It came down to August of last year was where I think we started to have these in-depth conversations. I mean, we were always having them, but it got right. You know, more at a crossroads. Once I hit capacity, I was going to have to make another hire, and us talking about what's our enough there. What are we looking to do? What am I looking to do with my life?
Yeah. And I think another piece of it too is you were getting maxed out, yet still wanting to see what you could do to help more people.
Yes.
And yeah. I think that was a big point of the discussion when it was time to decide if you should continue on your own and continue expanding your own team, or if you should be merging into another firm, which would provide the biggest impact that you could give to educate people around their finances.
That's exactly it. You know, we were at a point of, do I launch a course? Do I write my other book? What kind of information? What do I create next? And then with the idea that, yes, it would help more people, but it would also, people need this kind of one-on-one advice. And me not being able to have that resource was hard to stomach, or knowing that I would be referring them out otherwise and not really have control of that experience. And so I was really at a crossroads of like, well, do I keep creating and knowing that I can't actually service these people in a one-on-one environment when they need it? Or what are my options? And that's where this whole thing kind of came from.
Right. So obviously Abacus didn't just show up on your doorstep per se. So tell me where the opportunity came from.
So it's actually very funny. I don't know what JD was telling. So JD Bruce is the president of Abacus Wealth Partners. And we actually met, he tells people, he's like, we met in a nightclub actually, which was like a nightclub. It was like sponsored by XY Planning Network. It was the closing party. That's actually where I met JD for the very first time. It was in the one in San Diego. And I think it was right after I had we had Ellie, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's where I met JD and learned about Abacus for the very first time. And that was kind of it. And it wasn't until sometime, I think, that was probably September. And then it was like, I don't know, it was February the following year that I ran into him at a TD Ameritrade conference. And then it kind of came up that he was going to launch a mentorship group for up and coming advisors, solo advisors. Like Abacus was this big firm already. They managed like $2 billion in investments. And JD is very big on mentorship and giving back. And Abacus is such a unique culture, which we'll get into. But that whole thing with JD being able to, wanting to mentor a group, he ended up doing two groups. And so I was pulled in for the first one. And then after talking about it, we decided that he would actually mentor the study group that I was already in. So in a separate group, I was already in a group with five other advisors. He actually mentored us separately. And it was his first go around with this, but it was pretty formalized. It was 18 months. I think we met six times over that 18 months. And I'd go to the office in Santa Monica, and some of them were virtual because I was pregnant and didn't travel. But that was basically that 18 months I was exposed to Abacus and kind of how they work. And I was also challenged during that 18 months. So this is what started in 2017. And I've always been a proponent. Any clients who know me or people who I talk to about business, whenever we talk marketing or anything, I'm always like, get butts in the seats and then you worry about your process and your systems. Like you need to do sales, like get people in the seats and then you tweak from there. And so I think JD learned my mentality really fast. But I was mentored and I was challenged, and he kept challenging us to think bigger. And it was hysterical because I kept saying like, no, I only want to go to this size and then I'll be happy. And I know you remember this too.
I do.
And it was like a smaller number. I'm like, no, we're just going to go to this. I'll grow conservatively. I think last year, 2018, what we hit my 2020 goal. I think I hit my year end 2020 goal for income mm-hmm. that I went into this mentorship with is what I closed at in 2018. And so he just kept challenging, what does it look like for seven figures in revenue? And mind you, this is like just in like the service side of things of what I do. And what would it take to get there? I finally opened up to it and started crafting things out and what would it take and hire and like all of these things. And that's kind of where I think we finished the mentorship program in June of 2018. And I happened to be up in Santa Monica for another event in August of 2018. So just a couple months later, and that's when I was in a little bit of a burnout phase. And I looked at JD. I was at the Abacus office actually right before I was going to an event with another financial planner friend of mine. And I looked at him and I said, "Just buy my firm already." But it was kidding, and he laughed. And then it kind of became like, okay, well, what would that actually look like? And I went through the process of just chatting with them and thinking, it's probably not a fit, but I'm always the kind of person who wants to know what I'm saying no to. Before I shut it down, I want the details because I want to know what's in my back pocket or not in my back pocket. I need to know what my options are. And I wasn't going to shy away from it. So I figured other people would probably have just been like, you know, maybe they want you, maybe they don't. And I'm like, hey, would you want this? And what would it look like? And I had the conversations, and I ultimately actually had said no after I had the conversations. At that point in time, I said no. And to be honest, I'm not a big fan of, I love the company and the culture and the people. I was not a big fan of their marketing at the time. And when we originally talked about me joining, it was just joining as a partner. I would just merge in. And that for me was to be a part of something because of the brand and the culture that I want to represent online too, like in a bigger presence. I basically told JD, it doesn't seem like it'll be a fit. Also, your marketing sucks. I can't join a firm whose marketing sucks. And then it was actually like, well, would you be interested in being our chief marketing officer? And that opened up a whole nother path and conversation that was really exciting.
Yeah, I think from the beginning, just when you started the mentorship program, you mentioned that JD challenged you. And I think it was in a good way. And I think even taking the CMO role, I think that was a challenge that you saw and excited you. I think that's probably another piece of it that was very enticing for you, not just merging the firm, but being able to take a marketing department and run with it how you thought would be best.
Yeah,
and for the company.
And it's exactly where it kind of came down to, like you mentioned earlier, and like we've talked about, is the impact that we know mm-hmm. that I want to make and exactly. where I make that impact and how I make that impact. And that's kind of where this all came from.
Exactly. Okay, so we talked about how you came across Abacus. Can you tell us a little bit about Abacus? I mean, why did you pick them? Why not another firm? I'm sure there are plenty of other firms out there that would have gladly taken you on board, but why Abacus?
It's so funny. So I still work from San Diego, and we have offices actually in Northern California, LA area, Philadelphia. We'll be expanding further, but I always call it secret abacus now. Like, I love abacus because it's the secret abacus that nobody knows because of the marketing, which is like, we're changing. So we definitely already have things in the works there. Abacus has this amazing, amazing culture. So like, number one, they have, not that it will impact us because we're done having children, but they have 6 months of maternity leave for when you have a baby. They have this amazing culture of caring and connectedness, and they have this amazing diversity initiative. They talk openly, and there's so many female CFPs and women on staff there. And Brent Kessel's the CEO of Abacus and one of the founders. And I had known JD. JD was probably the one that I knew the best. And it was October when I went up there, right, to meet with them. Mm-hmm. And there was like the professional side of things, right? Of, yeah, what's your experience? I mean, I had done all of that stuff. And so it's really, we want to get to know you like as a person. Brent straight up asked me, like, what are your values? And that was really interesting, just an interesting conversation. And he also then is like, what are your feelings on global warming? And I was like, you remember? I remember this conversation, right? I told you about it afterwards tonight. And I said, it exists. And he said, and? And I said, and I recycle. And he's like, and? I'm like, and? And I basically said, if you're trying to figure out where I spend my time and resources, I have two tiny humans at home. And where we give back right now is only financially. We give back to causes because we do not have time and like energy to commit to other things while we are raising these tiny humans. And Brent was like, oh, I totally understand and get it. But it was just interesting. I had never been pressed in those kinds of areas. And that right there was just like a light bulb went off. It was really cool. Really cool to see. And other really fun things. Yeah, you know, I just did a whole presentation to the company about, we have great stuff. Part of my onboarding was I had to get sorted into my Hogwarts house for Harry Potter, right? And like, you have to wear that badge with honor.
Right up your alley.
Right up my alley. Exactly. Right up my alley. So, and you wear that badge with honor. And it's really interesting. We talk about these diversity initiatives with companies, which is really big in the financial planning world because, I mean, it is, you know, we talk about this all the time. It's old white man for the most part. Abacus recognizes there's still a lot of white people on staff. And so we talk about our diversity initiative. And the really cool thing was being new there and logging onto, we use Salesforce, and logging onto Salesforce one day. And I think it was like a week in, and seeing they have these chatter groups on there and actually seeing they walk their talk. That is the best thing, is like there's an active diversity and inclusion initiative. They have a book club. They're reading books. They're sharing articles on like a weekly basis. People are engaging with each other and challenging each other around these ideas of inclusion. And they're looking to service, you know, not just ultra high net worth people. But their thing is, you know, Abacus has no investment minimums. That's really, really interesting. And so the goal is we can work with anybody realistically. And it's really, they talk about working in your zone of genius. And so if you want to work with millennials, for example, and charge a monthly retainer fee, great. If you want to work with people who are retiring and manage their investments, fantastic. They're bringing in advisors and they're training them in actual financial planning, not like to be salespeople, but training them to be actual financial planners. And there's just so many different things they're doing, and they talk about it and they share it. And I think that the best part for me, seeing it firsthand, seeing it and experiencing it, that's who they are. And these people are all about really living out your values. And I could tell you, and you know, even the first few weeks since merging in and taking on this leadership role in the organization, I mean, also working with my clients, and the whole goal around this also is life balance and making sure that I can be present with the kids while also pursuing the things that I enjoy in terms of education and working with people. They push back. JD and Brent have both emailed me a variety of times, said, you're doing a ton. It's okay to slow down. It's okay to, you know, take this time. Like, don't work past this time. Don't work on the weekends. Boundaries. Like, they're also helping me to set those boundaries and calling me out on those things as well, because I will continue working until I will just keep going. And so it's been really nice to know that they care about those things that are important to me also. Like, they care about like me genuinely being happy there. And they literally call themselves a family. And they're like, if you join, like, you join the family. So that's in summary, Abacus. I could rave about them all day long. We also do like really amazing things with sustainable investing, but there's all that you can read on the website. But it was actually the culture and the people, why I'm there. We just did this whole like manifesto thing that's really cool. Like, so I'm looking forward to like showing the world what's behind the scenes, secret abacus, I call it.
Who they are.
Who they are. Who we are now, yeah. I guess, right?
Who we are. Yeah. All right, cool. What about opportunities there? I mean, opportunities for you, opportunities for future clients. Can you talk to that?
Yeah. So with the merger, I merged in Workable Wealth. I merged in Ariel, Lisa, myself merged over. Clients came with us over to Abacus. You know, I have my advisory role. And for me personally, I took on the role of chief marketing officer, which also means I manage the marketing department. I have a team. And so opportunities there are really interesting from any like online business owner and business owners that I work with. It's probably basic stuff that we're going to be setting in place there, just like telling the story, content marketing, like updating brands and stuff. So those are opportunities just for me for growth. And it's exciting to me, again, this culture and knowing how great these people are and their goals for growth and people they want to reach. That was the opportunity, right? For going back to the vision and knowing that I wanted to educate. My goal is financial education and empowerment. Bottom line, that's what I want to do. The more people that we can educate and empower around their money to make smart choices, that's my goal. And so being able to transition into this role with Abacus and be in charge of a department that gets to tell that story and is responsible for educating and bringing in people to also have this message to make better financial decisions was really cool. So that opportunity for me was about being able to play on a bigger scale at this point in time, right? If I was going to choose to build Workable Wealth still, it would have been a slower growth. It would have been just me. It would have been one hire at a time. This way, I inherited a marketing department that we've created, and I have a budget, and we have capacity to do like some things that I wouldn't have been able to do on my own, and that they need and they want to leverage as well. So I think the opportunity is like being better together. So I'm really excited about the audiences and the number of people that we can reach with our efforts combined. So that's the opportunity for career-wise for me. For clients and potential clients, it's cool. They have a whole onboarding system and we defer on how we do financial planning just in terms of the process. And so that's one of the things that we're like working on. Like, do we do it all up front? Do you do it piecemeal? I do an upfront financial planner. I have in the past. They do it quarterly. But either way, I mean, they have, I think, I can't remember off the top of my head, there's like 6 different financial planning teams that are in place. They have so many amazing financial planners and women on staff that I'm just like, they're like badass women. They're like super smart, so educated, talk about investments and like just ultra high net worth stuff and just basic stuff. They have so much financial planning knowledge. So for clients and anybody new coming in, it really doesn't matter what your financial situation is, whether like you want to give more of your money away, you want to save more of your money, you need to leverage like employee incentive plans, there is somebody there that can help you. And it's not like, hey, let's just let us manage your investments that you have to invest. It's also like, no, we'll help you with your financial planning as well. And here's how it works. So that's the really cool part. Also, just in terms of impact investing and sustainable investing, everything there we're about, Abacus is all about aligning your money with your values. And so whether that's using your money to do things that are more important to you and to free up time and capacity so your life is more aligned with your values, or literally investing your money in areas in, you know, companies that are good for the environment, or companies that screen out drugs or weapons, or companies that don't have women on their board of directors, for example. There's so many different ways that you can utilize your money. And that's been one of the really fun parts for me to share with clients as we merged in. I didn't have that capability on my own. I wasn't screening out investments. I wasn't necessarily digging in and seeing, okay, how can we really align this portfolio so that your money is being invested in an area that is important to you? But they have these abilities there and there's portfolios built around them. So those are some really cool opportunities that I hadn't really even thought to like speak about before. And now I see them there. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about a lot of these same cool things that Abacus is doing and the benefits of just being part of the Abacus family and Abacus team. So I think you're right. This is a great fit for you. But ultimately, what was the bottom line for you that said, this is where I need to be. This is what's best for me. This is what's best for our family. Because obviously I wasn't in any of the meetings that you had with with JD or anybody else. So I was just basically going off of your enthusiasm and your conversations with me on how I felt about it. But ultimately this really did come down to you saying, this is the perfect thing for me right now, and this is the perfect thing for my family. So what got you to that point?
I think the ultimate decision, well, I mean, you weren't there, but you always had wine waiting for me after the meetings. So that was lovely.
I did.
Yes. There were a lot of meetings. I think ultimately it came down to you know, it really came down to the wire, right? Even into those last few hours, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I think two things, and I talked about this in a previous episode that I did a couple of weeks ago, a solo one. It was a life planning session that I did with my friend Scott. Scott took me through some life planning, and it was really helpful in thinking about, okay, those questions of, you have all the money in the world, where do you spend your time? You have 5 years left, where do you spend your time? You have 24 hours left, where do you spend your time? What do you regret? And digging down into, like, okay, what's the impact that I want to have made? And is it my ego that's keeping me in workable wealth? Because I think that's a big part of it. There's a lot of ego involved when you build something, and my face is all over it, right? My face is all over the brand. And so that was a big thing for me to give up, or not to give up, but to come to terms with. Is my ego keeping me there? But what am I really wanting for myself? And it came down to, as I mentioned when we first started this interview, I felt like I missed out on a lot of Luca's life in that first year. And I was working a ton and I didn't know how to shut off. And I know you can put boundaries in place and I could streamline and do things, but it ultimately came down to, there were also parts of the business that were going to be dependent and always fall back on me. And that's unique to the financial services industry. There were certain things, every business has its pros and cons, but when you're a financial service company, a registered investment advisor, there's lots of legalities, compliance issues, and other things that were going to continue to pop up as I grew. And knowing that those would take away my time versus other areas, those were some of the things. It was the life planning. It was knowing that I wanted to spend more time with the kids. And that was it. And then I think it was the night before that I was supposed to sign, or like that Friday before, and I think we were signing on Monday, that I took out one of those sticky notepads, right? And sat down on the floor with you.
Yeah. That's right.
Brain dumped. Okay, what do I want to build if I stay, if I go, if I do this merger? What does it look like? What am I trying to do? Ultimately, what do I want? And I want to do financial education and empowerment. And do I have to own my own firm to do that? And the answer is no. I don't have to own my own firm to do that. I have Workable Wealth now. That website still stays everywhere this podcast is hosted. That all stays. And it's a financial education platform that we continue to push out content on. And that's why I decided my goal is financial education and empowerment. And I do not necessarily need to be the owner of a financial planning firm to do that. I'm also now an owner and abacus, and I still get to do financial education and empowerment. And I now have a bigger audience I can reach and money that we can utilize on a holistic basis to do things. And so I think there's a bigger reach that comes with this. And that's how the decision was made.
Well, I think it was just a challenging decision for you because it was two really great opportunities.
Right. You're totally right. Either way, we were going to be okay, right? And so that was really hard. It was literally making a decision based on happiness is super interesting. That was a big part of it. Either way would be okay. Mm-hmm. Which adventure do you want to choose? And
exactly.
And with the financial planning firm, I had walked through a lot of those doors that had already excited me and things I knew I wanted to do. And then there's more I want to walk through in terms of the education and brand building kind of things. But in terms of, hey, let me see this new compliance checklist we can figure out. And those were things, oh gosh, let's not.
Yeah.
Now there's a team at Abacus that does that and they love it.
I can give that to somebody else.
Yes.
Okay. Let's transition now to the clients and, you know, listeners and readers and people that just follow the Workable Wealth brand or Work Your Wealth brand. How have clients responded to this? What type of feedback have you gotten from them?
Everybody's been very, very supportive. They recognize it's an amazing opportunity that Abacus, there's a Workable Wealth, then Abacus manages $2 billion. So to go into this role of chief marketing officer for this really large and impactful firm and one of the biggest firms in the country is, they recognize the opportunity. So I've had a lot of support. And one of the things that I did do, we'll link to that blog, was shut down any naysayers right away. Because I did get some pushback of like, oh, it's really tough to be an entrepreneur. So
I remember those.
You know, some people just have to go back to work and get a job because they can't cut it. And that was, I was so mad. So mad. I won't digress there. But I got a couple of those and I shut it down right away because again, it goes back to what's going to help me reach my vision. Can I run a company? Heck yes. Like, am I still an entrepreneur? I have my consulting business still. That's where the book, the speaking income, other things come through, you know, those incomes come through there. I also have Abacus where I am actually an owner and I'm a partner there. So I own shares there. So still an entrepreneur, still have skin in the game, but everybody overall has been really supportive. And, you know, it was me and feeling at like, I was, ooh, what are people going to think? And I was harder on myself what, we merged in March and we're recording this in June. So the more that I let myself be excited, the more others are excited for me as well. And everybody's been great. I don't think we haven't really pushed the message out as much. And I'll link to Abacus in the show notes so you can check it out. I honestly haven't pushed the message as much because I'm not super stoked about the website and it won't be done until the end of this year. And that's one of my own personal things. And I tell them that and they know that, but the people, so aside from like the website presence and the opt-in and everything that I know my people care about for a lot of the times, like my people care about good websites. And especially a lot of my clients are online business owners and different things that we do. So aside from that, that's why the story hasn't been really out there, but I don't want to wait until next year to share this message. And so but that's basically how people have responded. You can see it, but just know the people behind it are so special and so unique. And yeah, but everybody's been great aside from, you know, and I expect over the next 6 to 12 months, this will get shared more and we'll be speaking about it and sharing more of it as well, because it is a unique thing. I was one of the first ones to start my company the way I had. And I'm one of the first ones to merge into a larger firm. And so I had a couple people like, are you going to spend more time? Is this because you want to like stay home with the kids or like just different things about that? I had to like shut some of that down too.
I remember those too.
But ultimately, I think there will be more talking about this from an industry perspective as well, because these are career paths and options. And I was on the front lines of being one to start my firm. And now I'm on the front lines of being one to merge my firm and merging into a leadership opportunity, which is very unique. So the story will definitely be more out there in the next 6, 12, you know, 24 months, as I'm sure we, you know, talk to other people and educate. My goal is always to educate women in the industry as well and share women and men, you know, men listen to this as well, educate people on what their actual options are for their careers.
Now, what about expectations? I mean, you know, you have a newsletter, you still have a blog, you still have the Workable Wealth podcast. What can readers, listeners, clients expect going forward?
Everything basically stays the same. I mean, so the newsletter will still continue to go out every 2 weeks. The blog and podcast rotate weeks. So the blog goes out every other Wednesday. The podcast comes out every other Monday. And that is all set up to stay. The Workable Wealth as a business, like as a platform, Workable Wealth is basically transitioning into a financial education platform. So probably in the next few months, if you want to become a client, we'll just redirect you to the Abacus site. But in terms of content and education, that will all stay. And the goal is after we're through this first 6 months heading into next year, there's a lot of other big projects that are on the pipeline for me as well. So Workable Wealth is a way for me to continue to reach my own audience because I have brought in a lot of people over the years. And so the Work Your Wealth, there will be a second book, probably a third book. I'm looking to launch something called Money Circles in the next few months. So we're bringing in women into small, intimate conversations to talk about, you know, money pasts and histories and kind of some of those emotional things that happen with our finances. So we'll still be launching new things and bringing people in, and the content and the brand there will stay the same. Same like casual, come as you are, I'm a mess too kind of thing. you can expect me to be the same.
Which is why I come on this podcast every once in a while, right?
Right, exactly.
To open up to how we do money.
Yeah.
Well, so before I ask about future plans going forward, you know, we talked about the brand Workable Wealth, Work Your Wealth. Where do you envision that going? What's the big goal there?
Honestly, I just imagine continuing to reach new people. So the newsletter list continues to grow, having new content, having a book that's geared towards breadwinning women, having a book towards entrepreneurs. I really just have you've seen my brain dump list of like all of the things I want to launch, and it's so hard to prioritize it all. But honestly, I just imagine it's just being a top financial education platform and people being able to come and get really like targeted advice too. It's not my goal with the content on Workable Wealth is not to like, here's why you should have a budget. Like everybody should have a budget, but it's also, you know, here's what to think about when you're buying your home. Don't forget you might have kids and you're going to have some daycare costs. So don't get a huge mortgage. And if you're getting like stock options from your employer, here's specifically how to handle them. I want really impactful content. I don't want fluff content. And so that's the biggest thing for me is making sure that our content, again, going back to like the genuine thing, but I want it to be content and educational materials that you can live and like act on, that you can actually utilize in your everyday life. I think the brand will just continue to be what it is, but continuing to evolve and grow and reach those audiences. But a lot of the same like tone and voice. I like to be able to build something that's authentic and I speak to people as if I'm coming up next to them. I think the brand will just continue to be a financial education brand. It'll redirect to Abacus over like the next 6 to 12 months in terms of if you'd like to become a client, that's where you become a client. But part of the merger was that this platform stays. I love this platform. And that's like the fun creative side for me too, is we get to continue to toy with it. So podcast is there now. I do expect future books, a course, workbooks. Those are all things that are on the horizon. Don't have a timeline for them all, but they will all happen at some point.
Okay. Last question I have for you. You've made the merger as of 3/1 this year. Going forward, what do you see for the future for you, the future for the family, the future for your long-term career, the future for, we briefly talked about the Work Your Wealth future, but what about you at Abacus? What do you see in the future for that?
Honestly, the biggest thing that I'm constantly trying to do is, and the biggest thing I keep saying right now is, I don't know what the next 5 years look like. I mean, I've taken on like a completely new role, and mostly personally for our family, obviously, like more quality time together, more trips, more adventures. I'm very much of the mindset of living in the now and getting out and having experiences together. And we talk about that all the time, the experiences. And so just having more family experiences that are mostly chaotic right now because of the ages of the kids. But I see that, and more time for personal development too. There's been a lot of things that I've wanted to do that I haven't done, and allowing myself to ease into it. More Peloton rides. We love our Peloton.
We do.
And I don't know, professionally, it's really cool to be in this role and to kind of have it as a blank slate and to see like what can be created? What can we do here? So because I'm new and still getting to know all of the people and the history, I don't have like this huge vision for what it looks like. But honestly, I just see being happy, like making an impact. I do want to figure out like a way. I want to go back at some point in time and quantify the number of lives that and people who have like read the book, listened to the podcast, downloads, clients, mm-hmm. and like actually add up that number. I want to have like a SMART goal, just like how the number of people I've impacted in my life. I want to like pick a number.
Reach a million people.
I don't know what that number is, but that hopefully I have that goal in the next 5 years and I'm well on my way. But that's something that's on the list to do, is I really want to have some sort of goal in mind of the number of lives that I hope to have impacted through this work.
Yeah, I think the one important thing that we've talked about already in the past is not knowing what the future holds or having a plan, because you've always had a plan, I feel like, on what you want to do career-wise. And I think right now, not completely knowing or understanding that plan is okay. And I think it's just making sure that you and I are both comfortable with that. And that's okay. If we don't know right now, that's okay. And we can figure it out along the way. Well, thank you for letting me take over the interviewer spot.
Thanks for interviewing me.
Of course. I always love talking to you. All right. Chat with you later.
Bye. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Work Your Wealth. If you're looking for more information on how you can make smart choices with your money, head over to workablewealth.com and sign up for 9 steps to workable wealth and get free tips and action items delivered to your inbox weekly.